Welcome to our call. My name is John Patika Jr. I'm one of the portfolio managers here at the Patika Wealth Management Group at UBS. And we've got a special guest here today, Laura Kane. She's the head of our UBS thematic research here at CIO Global Wealth Management. She's been responsible for the development of our thematic research content here at UBS, which includes both the shorter and longer term thematic ideas. And she's also a key partner in our COI's sustainable investment research efforts. We're really happy to have her here. You've probably seen her on CNBC and Bloomberg. I know she's been on Barron's and Bloomberg News a bunch of times. But Laura, welcome. Good morning.
Great. Hi, John. And good morning, everyone. Thanks so much for having me on the call today.
Absolutely. And Laura, can you start off with us and give us a quick overview of what exactly thematic research is?
Sure thing. So a thematic approach is different in the sense that it tends to take a longer term view. And when I say longer term, I mean more like decade plus. So it's pretty different than your typical financial analyst who's looking at, you know, the next quarter's earnings and the next kind of 6 to 12 months. And what we do is we identify investment opportunities based on secular trends. So some of the types of data sets that we look at include demographic data, so looking at things like aging and longevity trends, population growth patterns. We also look at technological innovation, so both the pace of change as well as new breakthroughs in technology. And we also focus on changes to resource availability, so looking at things like food supply chains, water scarcity, and energy demand. And as you can imagine, these secular trends are not directly tied to the business cycle, which, as we know, tends to dictate a lot of our other investment decisions. So in that sense, long-term themes are a great diversifier for portfolios because they're based on different drivers and drivers that tend to endure across the business cycle. And during the recent economic downturn that we had in relation to COVID-19 and the subsequent market sell-off, we saw that companies with exposure to these secular growth trends that I just mentioned, so areas like e-commerce, cloud computing, et cetera, these areas tended to fare better than some of the more cyclically driven parts of the economy. So some examples of themes that we have out there relate to areas like robotics, renewable energy, healthcare breakthroughs like genetic therapies and oncology. So as you can see, thematic investments really span every sector of the economy. So it's not just about technology, which I think tends to be a misconception. And a single theme can really be expressed with companies from multiple industries or sectors. So what I mean by that is when we talk about investing in e-commerce, for example, it doesn't just mean investing in Amazon and some of the large e-commerce giants. It could also mean investing in areas like real estate and logistics companies in many different cross-sector areas. So it's really about that whole ecosystem that's around one of these thematic trends or areas that we identify.
COVID-19 has been the single biggest driver in the markets this year. Can you tell us a little bit about how this pandemic has influenced your recommendations?
Yeah, and you're certainly right that COVID-19 has definitely been the biggest driver of markets this year. And what we've seen is that in many ways, COVID-19 actually accelerated some of the long-term trends that we've been focused on, especially as they relate to technology and how technology is going to influence various sectors of the economy over the next decade. So what I'll do is I'll start with two more kind of macroeconomic trends that we feel have been accelerated, and then I'll talk about some of the cross-sector implications that we see for investors. So the first trend that we saw accelerated is what we call the transition to digital lifestyles. So everything from working and learning to shopping and entertainment increasingly is taking place in the digital domain. And of course, we saw this during the pandemic, and it almost served as kind of a real-time experiment in terms of just how much we could actually do without ever leaving our homes at all. So whether it was telecommuting or online learning or shopping, whatever it is, we saw all of this kind of shift to the internet. And during this time period, it's perhaps no surprise that we saw mobile app usage rising somewhere between 20 to 30%, depending on where you sit in the world. The other major trend that we saw unfolding and that we expect to continue is this idea that we're going to see more localized production or a desire to onshore. Given the pandemic, we feel that many of the risks in our currently global supply chains came to light. And with that, we expect to see companies wanting to move manufacturing closer to home to developed markets. And the good news is that technology is already enabling us to do this in a cost-effective way. So whether it's areas like automation software or digital tools and robotics, these technologies are allowing us to produce goods locally at comparable costs to emerging markets, where, of course, labor costs are much lower. So we're going to see this shift of more tech versus labor within manufacturing, and we expect that to support areas like automation and robotics. So those are two of the trends that we've seen accelerating, and that those trends have many, many different investment implications across various sectors. So let me just touch on a few of those. So the first area for investors is really the technologies themselves. So we've identified a core set of what we call enabling technologies that we feel are having a disruptive effect across industries and powering many of the futuristic applications that we tend to envision when we think about the future. So whether it's driverless cars and robots, they really come down to a common set of technologies, which are digital data, cloud computing, artificial intelligence, augmented and virtual reality, and 5G. And we're seeing that these technologies are becoming mainstream, and we expect the addressable market for these technologies to more than double over the next 5 years. Now, I would also add cybersecurity to that list. Over the next decade, we expect to see 4 times as many internet-connected devices. And that's great in terms of connectivity and all the things that, those devices allow us to do, but it also increases the what we call the surface area for hackers to infiltrate. So we think cybersecurity is going to be an increasingly important concern, and this is not lost on boardrooms across the globe. This tends to be a pretty defensive area in terms of IT budgets, meaning that it's a must-have and not a nice-to-have for companies. So we expect to see healthy growth in the cybersecurity realm going forward as well. Now, outside of the technologies themselves, as I mentioned, there's a lot of cross-sector implications and investable areas that we see as well. So first, starting on the consumer side, clearly we've seen a big boost to e-commerce as a result of COVID-19, and this was a growth area that we were already seeing even before the pandemic. And what we saw, just to kind of put some numbers to this, is that e-commerce's share of U.S. retail sales roughly doubled during the pandemic, from about 12% to nearly a quarter of retail sales in the U.S. in the months of April and May. So really tremendous growth. And importantly, we're seeing that more types of goods are being bought online as well. So one of the interesting trends we observed is that more groceries were being bought online. Pre-virus, only about a single-digit percentage of groceries were purchased online. Now we expect this to reach about 15% by 2025 as consumers get used to this modern-day convenience. So as I touched on earlier, the investment implications of this trend really span the retail segment in terms of the e-commerce giants, but also traditional retailers with a strong online presence. There's also implications for real estate in terms of warehouses and data centers. So there's a lot of different investable areas or areas of the economy that will see a boost from these trends. Another related area shifting to financial services is fintech. So as we increasingly transact online, we're going to see a boost for online and mobile payment options. During the pandemic, we saw a greater demand for what are being called contactless payments. So a tappable credit card would be an example of that. So definitely going to see less cash and coins, more plastic going forward. And the emerging markets story here is important as well, because they lag behind us in the developed world in terms of access to the internet and mobile devices. But as this changes, we're going to see a big boost to digital forms of payments in EM as well, and also mobile banking capabilities take hold in the emerging world also. And then a final cross-sector area I'll touch on is in the food and agriculture space. This tends to be an area that's a little bit less talked about, so I think it's really an interesting one to touch on. So we're seeing that going forward, technology is going to play a big role in improving the sustainability of our global food system. So technologies like big data, robotics, even blockchain are going to allow for greater agricultural yields and more sustainable and safe food production. We're also seeing advances in areas like genetic engineering that are allowing for this rise in plant-based meats and lab-grown meats, which really hold the potential for massively reducing the land, water, and carbon intensity of producing meat. So this is another important and interesting trend that we expect to continue, and we expect that the plant-based meat market over the next decade can see penetration rates rise from just about a half a percentage today to roughly 5 or 6%. So just a final really interesting space that I thought I'd highlight as part of this conversation of how these accelerated technological trends are really affecting nearly every sector of the global economy.
Thanks, Laura. Can we turn to healthcare next? I mean, this has really been, as you know, a transformational time for our healthcare systems. What are some of your longer-term trends in the healthcare space that you see playing out in the post-pandemic era?
Sure, that's a great question. So there's no question that the pandemic has brought to light the need to improve the efficiency of our global healthcare system. And, you know, again, we believe that technology is going to play a big role in driving these efficiency gains and ultimately improving outcomes for patients. So similar to some of the other sectors I discussed earlier, we believe that digitalization trends in particular will influence the healthcare segment. So healthcare as a sector actually generates 5% of all the data in the world. So it's very data intensive, but it tends to be one of the least digitized sectors. So unlike the consumer sector where we've seen the disruption of e-commerce take hold already, healthcare is kind of behind that in terms of having a lot of potential for change that hasn't taken place yet. So, you know, one example that we've seen come to light during the pandemic was the increased use of telemedicine and telehealth apps. Just to put some numbers to this, during the month of March, Teladoc, which is the largest U.S. telemedicine company, saw a roughly 100% increase in virtual doctor visits during that period, which was about the peak of the pandemic. So we think these trends are going to continue as the benefits of telemedicine beyond just the convenience factor are realized. Telemedicine has the potential to broaden access to care and also to help contain healthcare costs. Now, I would say in terms of other long-term themes that we see within healthcare, there's other ways that technology will have an influence. So there's, for example, robotic and remote surgical capabilities being developed. We're going to see artificial intelligence be used for improving diagnostics and imaging capabilities. There's even possibilities for software to help to analyze population health and even allow for more efficient management of hospitals. Now, I also want to touch on a few more immediate themes that we're seeing within healthcare that are less related to technology. I know you mentioned kind of the post-pandemic era. So one thing I would point to as part of the kind of reopening of the economy, we're seeing pent-up demand play out in the medical device space as patients return to the doctor and seek some surgical procedures that they had put off during the peak of the pandemic. So we expect that trend to continue for some time. We also expect to see pretty robust medical research spending trends, in part spurred by COVID-19. So that should benefit the life science and tools companies within healthcare. And then finally, we expect to see further developments and improvements in COVID-19 testing capabilities. So everyone's really focused on the vaccine, but testing is a really important part of the story. And we expect that the demand for rapid testing will be longer lasting than some may expect. And we believe that can benefit certain companies that are able to innovate and improve upon existing testing options in the market.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room here, and that's the election coming up really soon. Could you talk about how to position for the election?
Yeah, so we spent most of this year worried about COVID-19, and I think that's pretty much shifting now over to the election as being the top of mind concern for investors as we get into the balance of the year. So what I would say is that it's still too early to call a winner of the election. As we know from past elections, a lot can change in the last couple of months before election day. So that being said, what we tried to do is lay out some scenario analysis and start to identify investment opportunities under some different scenarios. So let me touch on those. You know, I would say that based on the views of our public policy office, as of today, where things stand, based on the polling and prediction markets, the blue wave scenario with a Biden victory and a Democratic-controlled Congress is the most likely outcome. But again, like I said, a lot can change. So I'll focus on those unified government scenarios, the blue wave and the red wave, because that will have those will have arguably the most market impact. So let's actually start with the red wave scenario, where Trump stays in the White House and we have a Republican-controlled Congress. So in this scenario, what we would expect to see is further deregulation. We would expect to see an America First approach to international trade. So we believe Trump would be take a harsher stance on China relative to Biden. And we also would expect to see further or continued tax reduction. So what we've done is we've created a red wave stock list, and our recommendations on this list focus on infrastructure spending, in particular in relation to transportation and 5G networks. We also feel that energy and financial companies would be well positioned for a relief rally if Trump does win the election. And then within healthcare, we focused on managed care companies, which could benefit from the removal of the risk of an expanded public health coverage. And we would also feel that defense companies would be well positioned for this outcome. Shifting over to the blue wave, some of the policy positioning that we would expect to see is higher taxes on businesses and high income earners. We would expect to see greater spending on areas like climate change mitigation. And we would also expect to see expanded access to federally funded healthcare, perhaps by lowering the Medicare age eligibility or expanding Medicaid. So again, for this scenario, we have laid out some stock recommendations. And you know, in general, what we're recommending is companies, again, exposed to infrastructure, but more on the green infrastructure side in the event of a Biden victory. Transportation infrastructure and 5G buildup could also benefit. So that's an area that we see some similarity or overlap with the red wave. We're also highlighting companies that are more insulated from an increase in corporate taxes, and that could benefit if trade tensions with China cool. And then within healthcare, we focus on those companies that could actually benefit from an expansion of public healthcare coverage. Finally, I would also note that we do have some kind of long-term thematic areas that we've been recommending that we could see a boost to in the event of a Biden victory. So I don't think these areas will surprise you based on what I've outlined already, but areas like renewable energy, smart mobility, which includes areas like vehicle electrification, and even energy efficiency, which we like to call the less talked about alternative fuel. I mentioned green infrastructure earlier, so we could expect companies that are involved in making more energy efficient technologies, things like building efficiency, climate control systems, all of those areas could benefit under a blue wave as well. Now, the final area I'll touch on for investors is that if you feel that the election is just too uncertain and you just want to be able to sleep better at night, we also have a list that we came up with. We call it our Campaign Warriors Stock List. And this is a list that is for investors, like I said, that want to sleep better at night during the election while also, you know, maintaining their exposure to equities or perhaps adding some equity exposure. And these companies are those that we feel are kind of insulated from some of the key campaign issues and don't necessarily benefit from a victory of any particular candidate. So just to give you a flavor for some of the types of recommendations we have here. Within communication services, for example, we avoid the internet giants that have more regulatory scrutiny coming into the election. Instead, we focus on companies with diversified streaming content. Within financials, we focus on the exchanges, which could actually benefit from financial market volatility during the election, and we avoid the banks. And then within consumer, we focus on strong brands and pricing power, so those companies that could weather trade rhetoric better. So that just gives you a flavor for the types of opportunities that are out there. If you're looking to add some stocks to your portfolio, but you really want to avoid names that could be caught in the crosshairs on the campaign trail. So like I said, there's still a lot of uncertainty, and it's likely going to be a source of market volatility in these final months of the year. But we've kind of put out a lot of different tools that you can use to help position the portfolio for any different outcome that we see.
Thanks, Laura. And finally, in closing, I know we're getting close here to the end, but your team just published a new research piece. It was called The Future of Humans. Could you provide us just a brief overview of the report? I was reading a little bit this morning, and I thought it was a really neat report, but if you could talk a little bit about it, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So our latest paper, like you said, it's called The Future of Humans. And what we do in that paper is explore how demographic shifts like population growth and aging, as well as technological innovations that we're seeing, are going to shape our human experience in the decade ahead. And essentially, we believe that these trends are going to change what and how we learn, how we maintain our health and mental well-being, and even may shape our pursuit of happiness in the future. So there's three key chapters of the report. I'll just tell you a little bit about each of them. So the first one focuses on education. And essentially what we're seeing is that as technology changes, there's a big gap between the skills that our current education system delivers and those required in an increasingly digital world, like we talked about today. So we see opportunities in areas like ed tech to expand access to education and also allow for lifelong learning opportunities that will likely be paid for through a combination of government and employer dollars. The second chapter focuses on health. So we're touching on the fact that we're seeing an aging of the population and increased longevity worldwide. So we're going to see more age and lifestyle related illnesses like heart disease, cancer, and Alzheimer's. So the focus of the chapter is on tech-enabled solutions that are helping to expand access to healthcare and also help to come up with some innovative treatments for these age and lifestyle related diseases. And some of the technologies we touch on are telemedicine, wearables, digital health platforms to manage chronic diseases. We also look at some emerging technologies like genetic therapies, liquid biopsies, and robotic surgical capabilities. So a lot of interesting content there. And then the final chapter tackles this existential question of what makes us happy and how our pursuit of happiness will change going forward. So a lot of interesting content there. We touch on things like what increased screen time means for our mental health and well-being, and how technology may even play a role in mitigating some of its own ill effects. We also talk about how we'll enjoy our leisure time going forward, and we expect to see more digital experiences enhanced by augmented and virtual reality. And we also expect to see the younger generation have this preference for sustainability and sustainable brands going forward as well. So that chapter really has a lot of very new and interesting content. So definitely recommend checking it out.
Thank you, Laura. I know we're kind of getting at the end of our half hour mark here. And I want to thank you so much for joining us and talking about the things that you guys are doing at UBS Wealth Management Research. It really is helpful for us. If anyone wants a copy of that report, feel free to reach out to me or James. We'd be more than happy. It just became available this morning and we could send it over to you. We're going to continue doing these call series. We can get another one in next month and before the election and talk a little bit about some of our final thoughts. If anyone wants me to include any type of family or guests, let me know. Feel free to forward these invitations out. It's a really important time. We have a lot of stuff going on. I know we covered a lot with the pandemic and healthcare and the elections here and the future of humans. Feel free to give us a call. We'd be happy to discuss more. And once again, Laura, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great. I wish you a great rest of the day and a great weekend.
All right. Sounds good. And everybody, if there's anything you need, you feel free to give us a call. Take care now.